Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is State Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from New York's 39th District, which includes Middletown and Goshen. Senator Skoufis is chair of the Senate Committee on Investigations and Government Operations. Welcome back, Senator. Always a pleasure to have you here.
Great to be back. Nice to hear your voice, Alan.
Okay, so let's start by asking you, you're the head of the Senate Committee on Investigating. So what are you investigating?
Well, so just a few days ago, we actually announced an investigation. We're looking into IDA activity, Industrial Development Agency activity, specifically in Orange County, but we're also looking at some others around the state. These are the groups that give out property tax breaks to businesses, oftentimes, in my opinion, unwarranted. And so we're looking at some of those unwarranted situations and trying to hold them accountable on behalf of taxpayers because they've flown off the rails. And one of the reasons why property taxes are so high, one of the reasons is because they are selling out taxpayers, engaging in bad deals and offering these, we call them payments in lieu of taxes, property tax breaks, to businesses that would be coming here or would be expanding if we didn't give them a single dime. But how these agencies operate, many of them, is the company comes through their doors, tells them to jump, and their response is, how high?
Is there anything really insidious here, criminal?
Look, my committee, you know, we're not prosecutors. We can't arrest people. Occasionally, we find what we think might be legal impropriety, in which case we refer that off to the relevant law enforcement agencies. But that's not something we typically look for. And I will say, the last time we looked at IDAs, including the Orange County IDA, the CEO of the Orange County IDA lied to the Senate Investigations Committee and was convicted of defrauding the government as a result of that lie to our committee and is now a felon. And so occasionally what you're describing happens, but that's not certainly something that we directly engage in.
So obviously when you say, you know, you're not prosecutors, but you do make the laws which you're prosecuted under. I don't want to quibble with you, but isn't that true?
Of course. And, you know, one of the purposes of this investigation and all of the investigations that we do through our committee is we make legislative recommendations. And in fact, every single time we've done a report at the end of these inquiries, we have in the Senate taken up a package of bills in response to the investigation that our committee has conducted. And we've passed a package of bills. And so I expect that part of this, one of the outcomes here, will be continuing to shine a light on this bad behavior that's happening and passing new legislation, looking at what we can do better within the statute, and as lawmakers, as you said, make new law to protect our constituents.
And while you're doing this, studying these IDAs, what are the specifics of the Orange County investigation you're doing?
Well, so a recent tax break deal that they proffered that we're going to specifically be looking at is an existing company in Orange County that's looking to expand. And they're apparently doing well. They want to spend $18 million on this expansion. It's a food processing company. And they're looking for 15 years of property tax breaks. Part of their application, they've got a bunch of red flags. Part of their application is, one of the questions asks, how much money, how much new income are you going to get from this expansion proposal? And over the next 3 years, they're going to make over $85 million in new income. So you have $18 million in costs, We're going to make $85 million in new income. That alone, the IDA should have taken the application and thrown it in the trash. You don't need a property tax break. But it gets better. One of the questions asks, how many jobs are you going to create? We're going to create 50 new jobs. Wonderful. Let's talk about those 50 new jobs. 44 of them are going to pay $35,000 a year. $35,000. There's not a single place in Orange County you can live on $35,000 a year. And so thank you, Orange County IDA, for subsidizing minimum wage jobs. That's number two. And then the kicker is one of the questions asked, and this is the first filter of economic development. Is the project going to happen without the incentive? The question asks, will this project move forward without IDA benefits? They check the box, yes. So why in the world did the Orange County IDA unanimously approve a 15-year set of property tax breaks after all that? Taxpayers want to know. I want to know. It's one of the most egregious deals I've seen in Orange County. And so that's the kind of stuff we're looking at.
So I'm told you are pushing to remove the Cuomo name from the Tappan Zee Bridge. That would be the current Mario Cuomo Bridge. How come?
So it is amazing how visceral this feeling, this sentiment continues to persist in Orange and Rockland counties, that people are so upset and continue to be distressed that in the middle of the night, in an omnibus bill tucked in with all sorts of spending and other unrelated items, that people woke up one day and the Tappan Zee name was magically gone and replaced with the Mario Cuomo name. And now look, I have nothing against Mario Cuomo. I wasn't around in the legislature, but I happen to think he was a good governor. That said, he deserves a dedication on a bridge or a tunnel or a highway somewhere where there's not already a dedication. The Tappan Zee Bridge, by the way, it wasn't just the Tappan Zee Bridge. It was the Malcolm Wilson Tappan Zee Bridge. People forget about that. You know, Malcolm Wilson also had a dedication there. And so let's find something that doesn't already have a renaming associated with it. The Queens Midtown Tunnel would be perfect. In fact, the Cuomo family is from Queens. That would be a perfect dedication. And so we're looking to pass this bill because we want to return the rightful name to that bridge, the Tappan Zee name, and certainly find some other honorary dedication renaming for Mario Cuomo. But people are still very, very upset about how that went down.
And how are you hearing it? Do they write you letters? Do they call you on the telephone? Do you poll them? I mean, how do you know that?
We haven't polled it, but the rest, all of the above. People email us. People stop me in the street still today, and it's, what, 6 years later after this all happened, and ask me, you know, what happened? Where's the tap? Especially in Rockland County, but also certainly in Orange. It's actually come up in campaigns, if you can believe it or not, from opponents that this happened. How can you believe this? And so, this is still a top-of-mind issue, believe it or not. Now, look, if you ask me, of course there are more important issues to be dealing with, but we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And this one, I think, is something that we should really consider this year. I'm the first Democrat in the Senate to be carrying this bill. It's been previously championed by Republicans. And so I hope it breathes some new life into the effort.
We're talking to Senator James Skoufis, who is the chair of the Senate Committee on Investigations and Government Operations. So how much investigating do you smell? I mean, when you're thinking about your job and being the head of the investigations, how do you come up with what to investigate?
Oftentimes, it's issues that we hear about from folks like you or read about in the newspaper that sort of cut off the tip of the iceberg on an issue that we think needs some further delving into. Sometimes it comes from constituents. Sometimes it comes from my experiences dealing with agencies or stakeholders, local or statewide. And so it comes from a variety of different places. We don't just dream up these things. These are real lived experiences, whether it be from the media, from me, from constituents, but we get them from a whole different bunch of places.
So tell me about the IDAs. What are they and why are you investigating?
Every county in the state has an IDA, and many counties have municipalities within them that also have IDAs, which in and of itself is a major problem.
And IDA stands for?
Industrial Development Agencies.
Go ahead.
And these are the groups that they're authorized through state law from decades ago that are tasked with incentivizing new companies or existing companies that are looking to expand, to grow. And they're supposed to be looking out for taxpayers as their top priority. And so what do I mean by that? Yes, incentives play an important role. Some projects that are worthwhile projects need incentives to happen. But that speaks to the but-for clause of economic development. But for this incentive, the project would not happen. Mm. And what we have found, what I have found consistently across almost every IDA that I've looked at in the state, is that they completely disregard that but-for provision of economic development, which is the safeguard for taxpayers in New York State. Of course, taxpayers want to see good economic development. Of course, taxpayers want to see good, worthwhile businesses coming into their community that contribute to the local economy and create jobs. But if the project's going to happen anyway without the incentive, taxpayers don't want to be subsidizing those efforts. And so that's why we're taking a hard look at IDAs right now, is because they seem to have thrown out that cornerstone of economic development out the window.
Now, the Democrats are in charge of the Senate, so therefore you're the chairman of this committee. Are you finding much pushback?
On this issue, it's interesting. So New York City, the full five boroughs, they have one IDA. In fact, that's how the IDA should be set up. They should be set up regionally. I have a bill to do this, where for every region of the state, there ought to be one IDA. Hudson Valley gets one. Long Island gets one. Western New York gets one. That way, you don't have every county, all these cities and municipalities competing against one another for the same jobs, the same companies, in a race to the bottom within that region. And so New York City members, my colleagues in the majority, they're not quite as engaged on IDA activity and impropriety, because in some ways their setup is more advantageous and works well compared to the rest of the state. Once you leave the city, a lot of my colleagues are interested in this issue. They want to get it right. They understand that their taxpayers are getting ripped off. And so this has become one of many, many issues, of course, that we're talking about in the budget and certainly outside the budget legislatively.
Huh. Now, Governor Kathy Hochul recently released her $227 billion state budget proposal. What's your evaluation? What do you like? What don't you like?
With any budget, there, to your point, there's plenty that I like, plenty that I don't like. Some things that I do like, you know, significant investments in mental health. For really the first time, there was a significant disinvestment in the mental health space from the previous governor. Certainly, we're continuing to fulfill our obligations to fully fund K through 12 public education. One of the things that is near and dear to my heart, continuing to expand universal pre-K outside of New York City, continuing to phase in the middle class income tax cuts. These are all good things. Sometimes we lose sight of the worthwhile proposals because there's always so much attention to the more concerning proposals. But of course, there are some that give me heart palpitations. One of the top ones is the MTA payroll tax increase that she's proposing. There should be no MTA payroll tax, period, at a minimum outside of New York City. West of Hudson, where I represent in Orange County, we have minimal MTA service. And why are the businesses that I represent, whose employees don't take the MTA to get to their businesses, contributing to this MTA through this payroll tax? And they have been for many years now. It's wrong to increase it. Further perpetuates that wrong.
What are you doing about that? I mean, do you hector them, lecture them? How do you get them to understand that you're unhappy?
Well, certainly they understand I'm unhappy. I've raised it at public hearings. I've had many private conversations with the MTA. But the most important thing that I do is respond as a legislator. And I'm working with some of my other Long Island and Hudson Valley colleagues during the budget negotiations to try and protect our constituents from this increase. And so that's exactly what I am doing, what we should be doing, because it's a budget proposal. We're trying to kill this in the budget. Another set of proposals that are concerning are some of her housing proposals. Yes, we're in a housing crisis. Yes, we have to develop more affordable housing in many parts of the state. But to suggest that if you don't hit these arbitrary, strict demands, 3% increases in housing in Orange County over the next few years, then the state is going to override your local zoning and it becomes the Wild West for development. That is a major, major problem. It flies in the face of how New York State has treated local government and local communities and quality of life issues for literally centuries. And so that's something that's a sticking point that's going to be getting a lot more attention. And I hope that we can amend her proposal to, yes, deal with this crisis, but also respect the suburbs and the exurbs, the communities and the quality of life that people expect, and home rule that's existed, like I said, for centuries.
Now, Governor Hochul, Kathy Hochul's nomination for top judge in New York, Hector LaSalle, was voted down. How come?
In the Democratic legislature, there are some things that can survive if the far left is against you. There are some things that can survive if unions are against you. But there are very few, if any, things that can survive the Democratic legislature if both are against you. And that's what happened with this nomination. You know, there are some of us in the legislature that respond to far left activists. There's some that respond more and are sympathetic to organized labor. Either we and our families come from them. We partner with them and believe in the importance of unions and organized labor. And certainly I fall into that category. And so, I think there was a tremendous trepidation with the nomination once we saw some of the rulings, some of the decisions that impacted organized labor and people to the people's right to collectively bargain and not be sued for union activity. And so what happened was, you know, we had a nomination where I don't think there was necessarily full vetting or consultation before the nomination with the Senate that's tasked with confirmation. And now, look, you know, I don't speak for everybody, but I hope that we can look forward here. A reset button can be hit because we have important business to do on behalf of New York State residents. We have a budget to pass. We have a number of months of legislative session. And if the failure of that nomination turns into some major hostile activity for the rest of legislative session, the people who lose are the people of New York State. I want to look forward. What happened, happened. The entire Democratic Conference, save one member on the floor, voted against the nomination. It's time to move on. Let's get a new chief judge that we can rally around, appoint to the Court of Appeals, and fill that seat. But I really hope that we can look forward, not backwards, and have a strong partnership. There are two paths forward, either that or let the resentment boil over for the next number of months. That would not be healthy.
So, Senator Skoufis, let me ask you this. Why is this whole thing so political?
So I've heard that terminology used. I'm not even sure, quite frankly, what it means. Nominations come through the Senate. Senators are elected. Senators vote. If by definition, that's what political means, I guess this is political. I mean, we vote on things as elected officials, and nominations are one of the things. I have never viewed, as you know, and we've discussed this, yes. I have never viewed the Senate or the Assembly as rubber stamps. We are co-equal branches of government. We ought to be independent. We ought to be scrutinizing what's sent to us, whether it's nominations or bills. That is the purpose of the state legislature. We're not supposed to be. And oftentimes in the past, unfortunately, I have felt we have been rubber stamps, and it has frustrated me to no end. We are a co-equal, independent, and we should be a strong branch of government. And so, I'm not sure what folks mean by, why has this become so political? I think it's good we're scrutinizing what comes before us. It's long past time that we're doing that.
Well, let me just argue that with you. I mean, it depends on the motive, right? I mean, if you are turning down a nomination because a nominee may not be appropriately qualified, sure. But if you're turning it down because somebody hits Jack with a stick 5 years ago, that's a whole different thing.
The reason why this nomination went down is because a number of the rulings that this judge sided with were problematic to many of my colleagues and myself. They were certainly problematic to stakeholders that we deal with on the governing side, governing partners that I described before. The Constitution lays out our responsibilities in the state Senate. We are to advise and consent. In this case, we did not consent because we had problems with a number of the rulings that that's not, in my mind, that's not political. That's doing the due diligence that we're tasked to do, scrutinize recognizing the man's record. He's a very nice man, and in fact, I think he's a well-intentioned judge in a lot of ways. He's well-suited for his circuit bench out in Long Island. But for the top position on the top court, I and others just simply felt he didn't quite meet the bar that we were looking for.
Do you think there are some Long Islanders who might resent, you know, the idea that their guy was turned down?
I know that some of my Long Island colleagues were upset with how it went down, and I think that they are, and they're certainly capable, and that they are looking forward, as I described before. You know, we have important work to do, but yeah, you know, I think they're disappointed. Senator Thomas, Senator Martinez, they were supportive of Judge LaSalle, and I respect that. But you know, you win some and you lose some. You know, I win some and I lose some, and we always have to look forward to the next issue and the next fight.
And what's Kara's Law?
Kara's Law is an important piece of legislation that I picked up this year, previously carried by Senator Kaplan, who's no longer in the chamber. And it comes out of a travesty out in Long Island, where there was a custody case, and the mother warned about the violence and many issues that the father demonstrated. And nevertheless, the judge in that case, the court in that case, really disregarded the warnings, the flags that were being raised, and allowed for, among other things, unsupervised supervision of their two-year-old during this custody battle. Unsupervised supervision with the father, and sure enough, despite the warnings being ignored, the Kira, the 2-year-old was murdered, and the mother, whose warnings were ignored, had to bury her 2-year-old because the court system failed her. And so Kira's Law is an attempt to make sure that never happens again, and effectively put in place a system in family court that requires these judges to not just get some training, but to have a system in place that demands that they consider these warnings more adequately, more fully, and can't just say, okay, you know, we'll let this play out over the next number of months. Yes, we hear you, but we'll hear testimony. We'll go through hearings. And, you know, 4 months, 6 months, 9 months from now, we'll come up, we'll render a decision on who should get custody and what that should look like. But in the meantime, there should be visitation. We'll get to all of those concerns a little bit later. They should not be able to do that. The minute domestic violence is raised, the minute any kind of violence is raised, there should be a red flag. That should be a hard stop, and we've got to consider this.
So, Senator Skoufis, you have recently spoken about all of the bills that you've passed in the Senate. I think it's 70 bills, something like that. Which of those are you most proud of?
So it's interesting. The past couple years, I've been fortunate. My team and I, we have passed a lot of legislation, and some of it's important locally, some of it's important statewide. One that got signed into law last year, it deals with clean water and make sure that municipalities are finally testing for these emerging contaminants. Water systems all throughout the state have PFOA and PFOS. City of Newburgh's water supply was wrecked from contamination. And one of the lessons learned from what we have found in places like Newburgh and Hoosick Falls is we have to test for these contaminants that didn't exist maybe 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, but exist now and pose a danger. And so we got landmark legislation. We have the best testing now in the entire country, if you ask me, as a result of that legislation that we passed. I'm very proud of the universal pre-K expansion that we're engaged in now. I work with Senator Kaminsky and some of my other colleagues to really champion that and get our 4-year-olds in Orange County finally the same access to early childhood education that New York City's children have been getting for the past 8 years. I'm really privileged to be in a position to respond to issues locally, statewide. Those are a couple of the prouder moments legislatively that I've had.
Let me ask you this. You also noted on your website that you voted 58 times independent of your party. Is that important?
It is. Certainly my constituents expect that. I come from a district that Lee Zeldin won by 13%, the Republican governor candidate. And I've run in Trump districts. I've run in Astorino districts. I've run in Molinaro districts. I've run in Romney districts going back to 2012. And so I have always represented Republican districts. And it is important for me to demonstrate independence. First of all, that's who I am. And second, that's what my constituents expect. And so I read the bills and I make judgment calls. Is this good for my district? Is this good for New York State? And I'm proud of the fact that I've got that independent voting record.
Okay. So as the chair of the investigations committee, you have done those investigations. Which of them has proved to be most problematic for you?
So in addition to what we're talking about with IDAs, some of the other investigations we've conducted that have resulted in a legislative response and improvements on behalf of New York State, we've looked at something called pharmacy benefit managers, which are these drug company middlemen that jack up the prices for patients and pharmacists and taxpayers through Medicaid. And we've done some things in light of that investigation to respond to PBMs. We've done an investigation into utility price gouging, and we're putting together a package of bills. That one just concluded in December. We're putting together a package of bills in response to that to put up guardrails and protect our ratepayers. We've done an investigation into live entertainment ticketing practices. A lot of talk about Ticketmaster and how much this company is bleeding their fans dry. We passed landmark ticketing reforms last year. We've got more work to do. Taylor Swift's concerts really shined a light on this a couple of months ago.
How so?
You know, her fans couldn't get tickets for a variety of reasons, one of which was Ticketmaster and others were holding back tickets and letting them go onto the market, not for public on sale, but for sale to Diamond credit card club members and other VIPs. And certainly the prices of these tickets when you get to fees and the checkout page are astronomical. And so we passed some reforms last year that are very pro-fan, pro-consumer, and that came about from an investigation that our committee did. We've even looked at public authority spending, MTA and other public authority spending. And so, you know, we've done a lot of work in the committee that we're proud of. And let me be clear, before we took over this committee 4+ years ago, the investigations committee in the Senate did not do investigations. This is a new phenomena that I was very focused on to transition this committee into a real functioning legislative investigative committee, and that's what we've done the past 4 years.
We're out of time. Our guest has been Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from New York's 39th Senate District. Senator Skoufis, as always, it's wonderful that you show up and you talk to us. I so appreciate it.
Always a delight. Thanks.